Andrew.
I'm Kim. And today with us, we have Benjamin Floyd, the digital artist who's done all the work over on Beholder's Eye and is also one of our we're not hosts. What would you call yourself?
We're kind of hosts. We're there.
Co-players?
Podcasters? I don't know.
Players, maybe? Yeah. I don't know.
Co-players.
Anyway, we play games together on
co-adventure.
Yeah.
And there we go. We are co-adventurers. It's lovely. So, how are your guys' days?
Wet. It is currently raining in biblical proportions. Ooh. Up here in the north of South Dakota. I have spent the last 2 days with my left foot being wet all day, and I don't know why it's only my left that gets wet, but I sit at work and I take my shoe off to try and let it dry. My sock dries out, and I'm like, okay, my foot's finally dry, so I put my shoe back on, but my shoe is still wet, and I do that over and over throughout the day. Oh. I think I have trench foot.
Oh, man, you gotta start taking socks with you. Or something.
I guess. Or just different shoes. I got to put like plastic bags on my feet or something.
Oh, you
I don't
can
know.
Get the old man rubber shoes that you put over your other shoes.
I might as well just go over like, you know, full on like hip waders. Go on like news journalists just walking into work.
Gold Bond does great for dryness.
like just spray it in the shoe or?
Yeah.
I suppose. Oh,
I do it.
I thought that was just for babies' bottoms, but
well, the Gold Bond Medicaid stuff's probably not good for a baby, but because it kind of it kind of burns.
I'm glad I'm not a parent because I'd be making some very bad choices.
Oh, I'm not either. I'm just assuming.
Yeah, I don't recommend it. Don't do that to your babies. So this is now baby advice for for the bachelors and married without children.
What about you guys? How's your day been?
I got to deal with Windows 10 1803 issues, so that was really fun. 1803 was the spring update, and it wrecked a whole bunch of stuff. But yeah,
Windows update wrecked stuff.
I know, crazy, right? So I just had to deal with people on the phone today who were like, this printer no longer works and I have to figure out what driver to use. And it's a whole thing. It's real fun. So that was a good chunk of my day anyway.
Yeah, more and more it seems like anytime Windows releases an update, it's something huge and big and yeah.
It's okay. They don't need to test it before they send it out. We can be their beta testers. It's fine.
Test and prod. What about you, Ben? How's your day been?
Oh, very long. I have a weekly D&D session, and we seem to be going later and later. So I got done about after midnight, and then I have to wake up before 6. So
that stinks.
Yeah, I took a nap for lunch, and that was great. So
I wonder how many calories that is.
You burned 20 calories by taking a nap in your car.
I did read somewhere that you burn about 45 calories an hour when sleeping.
Really? I'm going to sleep more often then.
Right? Oh, so anyone that knows me knows that I am a pumpkin spice fan. The funny thing is that I don't really drink PSLs or, as the layman, you know, pumpkin spice lattes. I just never did. I mean, I just like pumpkin spice. I love pumpkin pie, pumpkin spice everything, but I've just never really had pumpkin spice lattes from Starbucks. Today I had one.
And
it was good. I liked it. It was good. I went up to the cashier afterwards, and because she was so excited that it was like, this is like the first one you've had? Because other years I've had like Caribou pumpkin spice ones, and
it's not
really
the same.
Good. No,
they're not nearly as good.
And I was like, Starbucks. Yeah, it's really good. It's a little sweet for me. And she's like, well, next time just ask for like half syrup. And then she's like, because you weren't completely satisfied, let me just fill your cup up with like some coffee.
Oh,
so nice. Yeah, I got like two drinks for the price of one, and it was good.
That's great.
That's the big news of my life. So
things to be excited about. I also have had pumpkin spice lattes. And I, even though it's warm, like I can't drink them frozen. So I've enjoyed them. Even though it's hot, like it's 90 degrees, I'm drinking a freaking pumpkin spice latte hot because that's the way they're supposed to be.
Yeah, and they taste good. I mean, you hate on the idea of it, but vanilla, cinnamon, allspice, cloves, coffee, and cream.
Mm.
Those are all delicious.
Dang it, now I want another one, Andrew.
I do what I can.
So when Starbucks sponsors us.
Yeah, right? Why don't we start talking about some IT tech here? Because I think that's what our podcast is about.
No, so far it's about babies and pumpkin spice. Come on.
Well, I kind of read an interesting article that I thought I'd ask your guys' opinions on.
Shoot.
Or, I don't know, just the general discussion. So everyone knows Amazon has like their cashierless stores where you just walk in, grab what you want, and walk out.
Yeah.
And it automatically like tracks what you get and it charges your Amazon account.
It's not creepy at all. It's fine. Yeah.
I think it's kind of cool. I love stuff like that, like self-checkouts. I'll always go to them. But I saw that they're going to be pushing like over the next couple years really hard. And according to this article that I saw, 3,000 they want to do before 2021. And now the majority of those, it seems like they want to do in like the big, you know, metro areas, of course, like Chicago and New York. I'm really excited to see if this idea starts changing the way grocery stores kind of interact with people. I'm just excited to see this disruption. Like, I love it when an industry gets disrupted, and I love to see the innovation that happens. So not only do you have Amazon doing stuff like this, but I'm really excited to see like what, you know, the regional things like Kroger or Hy-Vee, the things that they're going to try and, you know, develop, what Aldi's going to do in order to stay relevant and compete with Amazon, because it's going to have to happen.
Well, Aldi is just going to keep being like ridiculously cheap.
That's true.
Always self-serve at Aldi's. So.
I will eat my produce and question whether or not this is healthy for me to eat because of how cheap it is.
Yeah.
Oh, I miss Aldi's. We don't have any out here. At least not in my area.
No Aldi's in San Francisco?
Yeah.
That does not surprise me. That doesn't seem like an Aldi's kind of place.
No.
But as far as the disruption goes, like I think the self-service lanes are probably about as disruptive as we're going to see in a usual place, at least I would say in the next decade. Because even like the pay by phone kind of things, I don't see those being used a whole lot. But I'm obviously also not like creeping on people to be like, who, how are you paying?
Well, I almost think that like I could see things like, I don't know, like Kroger or Hy-Vee. I'm just going to use Hy-Vee because that's the one that I know. It's a pretty big regional one.
Indeed.
But yeah, it releases like an app or something on your phone where you can go around the store. And you just hold up your phone to whatever barcode of a product you're putting in your cart,
mm-hmm.
take a picture of it, you know, or it just scans it, and you could basically just walk out. I think that would be cool to see.
I could see Target doing that first.
Target. Because I know Walmart has, like, I think Walmart has, like, a gun that you can, like, pick up at some, like, test stores.
Oh, really?
And it's, like, basically, like, an inventory gun or scanner that you scan a product, put it in your cart, and then you can walk out. But I think it's only been in some test stores of theirs.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I could see, I think that'd be really cool to see companies moving towards that. But the other flip side then is, I wonder if we're going to see an increase in like security. Like, are we going to have like Costco people at, you know, at every exit checking your
cart? We know you pay to get in here and get all your stuff, but we're also going to stop you at the door to make sure you paid for it. Ugh.
No, I just love seeing technology being introduced to markets that historically you don't really think there's a lot of technology in.
That's true.
Like even the price tags. I think I read somewhere that we're going to start seeing digital price tags everywhere in the upcoming years.
Well, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, because you don't have to go through and relabel everything on your shelves. You could just digitally update them.
One of the things I hated most working retail was all of the flipping signage. you have to go through and change out.
Yeah.
Like every sale, every time there's something new, every time a price changes. Ugh. Yeah. So that would be, it would save them a lot of money because then they wouldn't have to pay associates, mm-hmm. which could be bad for the economy in some ways, because if you've got all these people who are depending upon these hours where they just go through with a price gun or whatever, like that might be a bad deal. But for the companies, it might be good. I don't know. There's always a many sides to every subject. So I don't think it's going to happen in like regional grocery stores, at least not for a while. But
you think it'll be a little more gimmicky? Or like you might go to like an Amazon Go, you know, grocery store to just kind of pick up some basic staples or while you're out there on the run?
Yeah. Or like I could see Target or places that already have apps. Yeah. Kind of starting to do that, maybe. I suppose Hy-Vee does have an app, but they don't have like the Target has the scanning technology and all that already with their Cartwheel. So that I could see.
Target already has
transitioning
incredibly intensive consumer tracking.
What? You mean that's why I keep getting all the stupid coupons for baby stuff? Oh wait, don't buy a bunch of gifts at Target, by the way, for baby stuff, and then not get all of the gift things for baby stuff. It's real fun. Anyway. So
what is our main topic today?
Digital art. There's a bunch of gear that goes along with that. We've brought Ben in to talk a little bit about it.
So as far as I know about it, and I went to a college or a university where a very large part was their liberal arts, where they had a lot of digital art designers and people. I don't know what the right term is. One of the coolest things I ever saw, and about all I know about digital art, is that you get those cool, like, Wacom tablets.
Yes.
To draw around with. That's about as far as my extent is. And I know you use, like, Photoshop or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you want to, like, too long didn't listen, if you go Wacom for your drawing needs, you can't go wrong. And most things are incorporating Wacom digitizers. So it's leaning that way anyways. But it does come with a price tag.
So what is a Wacom tablet, Ben?
A Wacom tablet, depending on the type you have, it's just a way that you can draw directly into your computer instead of wasting tons and tons of paper and lead. It's not quite the same as drawing on paper, but it does make digital art very easy. And there are quite a few different types. There's a couple different levels. There's a bamboo. Well, okay, this is old school. I don't know if they're around anymore, but a bamboo is just a tablet. It has like no pressure sensitivity. You can draw straight lines, you can just draw single lines, and it's more, I guess, for sketching or taking notes if you want to do that. I have a Cintiq, which is it's a monitor that you draw directly onto, which makes it a lot easier to associate what you're drawing with what you're seeing instead of drawing on a tablet and then looking at the monitor and then there's a lag. So, So Cintiqs are the way to go if you really want to get involved with it. If you just want to mess around, like this.
So if someone was starting out and they kind of wanted to learn a little bit more about digital art, maybe get into it as a hobby, what kind of like entry-level hardware and entry-level software would you recommend someone get into?
Well, there's actually a lot of free software out there. One big one is called GIMP, and it's kind of Photoshop Lite. I believe it's open source, so you know it's always evolving.
It is.
Okay, and free is always good if you want to know what you're doing. And a Bamboo would be fine, like I said, if you just want the very basics. But Wacom also has I don't know how to pronounce it. I think it's Intuos. It's Intuos. And they are not like my Cintiq. They're just a tablet, but they have all the pressure sensitivities. It's half the cost of a Cintiq, so that's always good. I think probably around $300 or $400, depending on what size you want, where I think the mid range or the beginner range for a Cintiq is at least $1,000. And that's for like a 12-inch, which is what I have. And they go up to at least 24. They might be bigger now, and you're looking at $3,000 for those.
Wow. And I'm guessing with these, not only are they, you know, sizes and there's a lot of other things to the hardware itself that's playing an aspect into the price. Like, do they all have pressure sensitivity, or is that only reserved for the higher end ones?
They even the bamboo nowadays, I think they do have pressure sensitivity, but it is varying degrees. So I think 2048 levels of pressure is kind of the norm now for probably the Intuos and above. I don't think bamboos have that much, if they have any at all. A lot of, there are like the Surface Pro. It's that's a great tool. I have something similar, which is a Vio Canvas. And I think both of those have 1024 levels of pressure sensitivity. And
So the Surface Pro itself, like in the screen, has...
So it's my understanding. I'm not the tech person. Mm-hmm. I just know what works. all the sensitivity is in the... Well, actually, it's probably a combination between the screen and the stylus. Yeah, I'm
interesting.
Go with that. And then I think the newer Surfaces also have like tilt functionality. So you can like turn your pencil or stylus on the side and do like shading like you would with a real pencil, which is really
cool.
And I think Wacom's did that a long time ago, but... The Surface is a great all-in-one tool if you're on the go, and you can get a pretty decent one for a pretty good cost, and it's a laptop as well.
So when it comes to digital art then, what would you say, what attracts it to you more than, say, traditional like paper or paint? What are the benefits that you see?
The most obvious upside is that you don't have to store paper. If you draw something, you have it forever, assuming your hard drive lasts. Well, that's probably the big one, but there's also undo. So when you mess up, you just hit Control Z and you don't have to erase it. You don't mess up your paper. Or if you're painting, you don't mess up your painting.
Yeah.
So it
definitely, as a photographer, I can definitely relate to that when it comes to digital photography versus, you know, developing stuff on film. It's nice being able to, like you said, undo or
edit out whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Make an edit, say, I wanted something a little different.
Change the color or make it black and white if you want to, and it costs you nothing.
Yeah.
That's always great.
So when you're doing all of this, like what kind of software, like you said, GIMP is like the cheap free stuff, but.
Yeah, GIMP is free. I personally use Adobe, the Creative Cloud Suite, which it is pricey, but if you use more than a couple of them, of the programs that are in there, then the yearly is worth, I think it's about $700 for a year subscription, which
oof.
I'm not a fan of subscription models, but if you bought that package when they sold it as standalone software, and so once you buy it, it's yours forever. That full package was, I think, around $2,500. So, you know, in 3 years, you would have paid that off, but you do get the benefit of it constantly updating. So if there are new things, then you're not left behind. And then the
sure.
With the price tag like that, is there really that big of a difference between, like, say, the Adobe products and then the free ones like GIMP or some of the free editing tools?
It is highly optimized, I would say, for at least what I use it for. Since I have the Adobe collection, I don't actually work with GIMP anymore, and so I can't really speak to that. I don't know what they
GIMP sucks, but I'm also not a graphic artist. I tried to use it to make our service desk thing, and I failed spectacularly and had to get somebody who had Photoshop to do it for me.
And I don't think we've asked yet, but what is it that you do? Like, what is your specialty? What is your favorite thing to do with digital art?
I do a lot with it. It's purely a hobby for me. I have recently got into digital painting, which I absolutely hate real painting because I can't mix colors to save my life. So that's another benefit of digital art. You can just pick and pull, and that's your color. So I do some painting. I do a lot of sketching, which is just, it's more fun. It's like a release for me. It's not necessarily for the enjoyment of other people. I do vector art, which is also one of the Adobe things. Illustrator is fantastic tool. It's a little messy. And in that way, it does feel kind of like an open source program, because it's just like, why are you doing this this way? Like, I mean, Photoshop, your cousin has this down pat and you can't do this. But there's a lot of there's not a lot of cross between the Adobe products. That it's like even keyboard shortcuts are different. And I don't get that. But I guess that's what happens when you take all the programs, or you buy the companies that make those programs, and they're all different, and they just go with what works, I guess. Yeah, vector art, okay. I really like, because you can make it super small, and then you can blow it up really big, and there's no loss of quality. But as far as vector painting, I don't know if that's actually a thing, because painting involves a lot of different hues and variations, and I haven't looked into it. But so Photoshop would be my painting program if I were to do that.
Cool.
I think another good sketching program is, I think it's Autodesk, which they're more known for like their 3D programs, like Maya and 3DS.
I've heard of that, and they, I think they do a lot of
it's CAD.
CAD. Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
I was going to let you figure it out, but yeah, CAD, yes, they do. They took over CAD software pretty much. So Autodesk did, but they also have a great sketching program called Sketchbook. And that's just, it's really quick. It's very slimmed down. It's specifically designed as if you had just your sketching painting tools, and that's it. There's not a lot of fanciness to it. So if you just want to do quick and dirty, Sketchbook Pro is fantastic. And I think they have like a trial version, which I think it limits your layers, so you can have like one or two layers maybe, and then you're done. So, but it's great. It's very
now
quick.
Are all these software pieces available for both Windows, Apple, Linux, or is there a pretty sharp lean one way or the other?
They've gotten better as time has gone on. I'm pretty sure the Adobe stuff works for both. Autodesk, I'm not really sure. Again, I'm a Windows user, and I've always been a Windows user, so I'm not really sure what their branching out is towards the Mac or Linux. I know nothing about Linux, so I cannot even guess at that one. So,
yeah. We'll have to ask Sam sometime.
But I think GIMP is a Windows tool. Maybe that's because of Mac. I hear it's not friendly open source.
If it's open source, no, not at all. Mac likes their things to be just the way Mac likes them to be. And yeah. Open source is not shitty.
Definitely.
Actually, speaking of Macs or Apple, they do have iPad Pro out. And that has a fantastic pen. And it feels like that's the closest I've come to on working like a digital pen that feels like a real pen or a pencil. The downside is it's an iPad Pro, and you get iPad apps, and that's it. You can't install Photoshop or anything like that, which, I mean, the closed offness of Mac is my main reason I don't use that for art. Because you need a variety. Yeah.
It's frustrating.
So, and I know, coming from just the hobbyness of taking photography and trying to learn more about that myself, I do see that a lot of Mac computers and software, so to speak, kind of leans a lot towards the Mac side, especially when it comes to displays. It seems like Mac has some really nice Retina displays, which just give you a far superior than what a lot of Windows can.
They got that down. And you pay for that too. So, but I think.
So besides like tablets and maybe, special displays, do you need super fancy graphics cards? Do you need, a lot of RAM? I'm guessing you need a pretty big, you know, hard drive in order to store what you want.
Oh, yeah. You can make pretty beefy files, if, especially if you're painting on Photoshop. I mean, that's going to be, yeah, that's going to take up a lot of space, but it also takes up a lot of resources. So I would, if you're doing digital stuff, I highly suggest an i7. i5 is good. I have an i5 on my desktop, but I have an i7 in my Canvas, and it runs significantly better. So i7s, get as much RAM as you can. And a lot of that's just so you can have like a million undos and not have to worry about it. So, but if you're painting huge pictures and you use big brushes in Photoshop, it's a resource hog. So the more RAM, the more processing power you have, the quicker it'll go. And then it's a smoother, you're not like, you make one stroke and you wait 4 seconds because the computer hasn't caught up to it yet. You do need a decent amount of power. Graphics cards, I don't think they're too important. You can get by with like my Canvas, it's a i7, so it has the Iris GPU that's in the processor itself. Mm-hmm. So and that works fine, because I mean the CPU/GPUs, those have come a very long way. They're getting to the point where, I mean, you're never going to get rid of the dedicated graphics cards, but for most non-gaming issues, I think those types of CPUs are great.
Cool. I, you know, it's just a hobby, so to speak, that I've always been very envious of people who have been able to just pick up a pen, and I'd see people at college, you know, with their little tablets just sketching something away, and 5 minutes later they have it on their, you know, portfolio website. And it's always been something I've been interested in, but I've always felt intimidated by when it comes by the software and the hardware side of things.
Yeah, I mean, it can be intimidating. There's a lot of, like, Photoshop is, there's tons of tools, tons of bars. There's stuff I don't even know about, because, you know, I know how to do what I need to do. And then I'll be watching a YouTube video and I'm like, wow, that they're like doing something entirely different. They're working with photo manipulation or something. And I see it and I'm like, that could have saved me hours as I've gone on if I had known that. So I think there's a pretty easy barrier for entry. But once you get to I guess there's a lot of room to improve as well. So
so once you get past hobby and more into taking things a little more serious, then you start going down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a fun rabbit hole to go down, though. So if assuming you enjoy it.
Fair. Very
fair.
Do
you have any other questions, Kim?
He covered the iPad one, because I hang out. Not that he ever would listen to this podcast, but hey, Josh from Sneak Attack, I hang out in his Discord and he talks a lot about the different pieces, and he, I think, recently got an iPad or something. And I was like, that sounds like a terrible idea, but okay. Yeah. But if they've got good Retina displays, that explains a lot.
Yeah. Windows Surface, they have like a whole, they're trying to kind of imitate Apple in the regard of quality. And so they have like their own, I think it's called a Surface Mobile, and it's basically like the Cintiqs, where it's a touchscreen drawing tablet. It's huge, and they have pretty good displays as well. I doubt they compare with Apple's, because they are just very good at what they do for screens. So, but they're getting there.
And you did mention like the starting off can be pretty easy, and I will say I've seen some really incredible artwork from people just using like their fingers on like phones or like iPads, just, you know, your regular run of the mill.
Yeah, it always comes back to your skill rather than your equipment, but having nice equipment helps a lot.
Yeah. But some of my favorite photos have been from like, you know, photographers that have gone out with just like digital cameras that are like disposable, or you know, little Nikon point and shoots. You could do some really cool, you know, intentional retro looking. Yeah, it's really cool what you can do if you have the skills, you can make any tool work for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming on. It's
thanks been for having me.
Great to be able to like talk to people in these fields that we're not really the most educated in, so to speak, and things that people are a little more passionate about, because you know, I could do the research on this, but talking to someone that actually does it themselves is something that we're glad we're able to do.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. This has been great.
So, Ben, what would you like to promote today?
Well, I would love to promote actually a podcast that you're on with me, Kim. It's called Beholder's Eye.
What?
And that's, yeah. and I'm terrible, but I'm not a social media person. That's actually Kim's job, so I'm glad she came along.
It's very true.
I think it's beholderseyecast.com.
Yes, it is. Good job.
Beholder's Eye Pod?
Hey.
Or Twitter?
You right? Got it.
Yeah. All right.
And where can we find you on the Twitters?
I am at Miro4D2. That's MIRO4D2. And yeah, I post some pictures up there occasionally. I more retweet stuff. But if you'd
is
like...
Is there anywhere we can see some of your art? Or is that something that you don't really...
Yeah, so I have a website. It's floydiantheory.com.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a nice name.
It's very old stuff, but probably Twitter and Instagram are probably my more up-to-date stuff. But my website has some like game mods I made for Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, and just, I think, a couple Flash games that I made. So I don't know if anybody can play those nowadays.
Yeah, Flash kind of doesn't exist. So
I know, unfortunately. It was such a great program to work with as far as quick iterations through game making. But yeah.
So it goes.
And I haven't learned anything else. So so I stopped.
Awesome.
But yeah.
Cool.
Twitter's probably the best, my most active social media.
If nothing else, I force you to by tagging you in all the things.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
Well, if you wanted to find out more about this podcast as well, where can they go, Kim?
You can go to servicedeskpodcast.com. Facebook is facebook.com/servicedeskpodcast. And on the Twitter.
Twitter. I think I got this. Service Desk Pod.
Hey.
Woo.
Yes.
And we discovered Andrew really does have a Twitter handle.
I found it. I discovered I have two.
Oh, really?
One that I retweet, or I used to retweet companies to enter into contests with. So I didn't flood everyone that was on my other one, all like four people.
Oh, I mean, I appreciate that. I don't know which one I'm on, though. Anyway.
Probably the one, the professional one. Anyways, yes.
So where can we find you on the Twitters, Andrew? Or do you not want to publicize it?
Mine is nothing. It is the most inactive. There's tumbleweeds, I think, being tweeted on that Twitter. So that's probably just going to stay
inactive,
unmentioned.
Well, yeah. I try to make people go follow you anyway. But anyway, you can find me at MetzGirl on Twitter. And yeah, like Ben said, over on Beholder's Eye as well. But please rate and review if you enjoyed this content on iTunes or any of the podcast review areas that you would normally have.
Yeah, definitely. And even just liking and sharing and just telling someone else about it, that means a lot to us. If you have any questions, please email us. We would love to be able to read them off and answer them and discuss
them. Or create entire podcast episodes about them.
Exactly. But as always, I'm Andrew.
I'm Kim. And we are your techie friends.